Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Welcome to Fantasy Sports Today, right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Dane Martinez and the King Scott Engel holding you down for the next hour. So whether you're listening live here on iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, wherever you get your podcast, or some terrestrial radio stations across the country, thanks for tuning in here on a Monday morning as the sun is about to set on week 9 of the NFL and fantasy football season. We'll get you ready for Monday Night Football a little bit later on, but we're going to take this hour to continue to break down the games that we saw in week 9. If you want to join the show, the number to call is 844-843-6879. Scotty, how you feeling going into a Monday to end off week 9?
I almost feel like the Dallas-Tennessee game is sort of anticlimactic tonight because I don't think there's a whole lot of fantasy investment in tonight's game. So I think there's a lot of resolution of the wins and losses this week, and it was a very exciting Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's true. You know, Tennessee in general, you haven't necessarily relied on those options. I told you I need Deion Lewis in one league. I know a lot of people probably are going to have Corey Davis in their lineups. And then on the Dallas side, we've talked about the Dallas as a streaming defense possibility. And we've also talked, you know, obviously Ezekiel Elliott will decide some matchups tonight. But we'll get into that. But first, let's look back real quick. And I think the narrative, we got a poll question up, Scott, as well. And the question is, who is the best one-loss team in the NFL, Scott? You got the Rams, who entered yesterday undefeated, but they get their first loss at the hands of the Saints. So now the Rams are 8-1, and the Saints are 7-1 in the NFC, the Saints having already had their bye. And then over in the AFC, the Chiefs, who apparently, by the way, Scott, have the best three wide receiver tandem in the AFC, are 8-1 as well. Scott, this poll, thank you, first of all, to the, you know, hundreds of people who are voting on this poll, and you can find us on Twitter at Spittin' Speeds, at Scotty Roto X. Right now, Scott, it is pretty close as the numbers continue to change right now. All of them in the 30s. 38% say the Rams, 32% say the team that just beat them yesterday, the Saints, and 30% say the AFC one-loss team, the Kansas City Chiefs. You are begrudgingly still riding with the Rams as the best one-loss team in the NFL, right?
I wouldn't say begrudgingly. I'm just, you know, it could change in 2 weeks. You know, for now, I still think the Rams are the best team, but it's almost like the Saints and them are even. You know, people could be saying the Saints are playing better on defense, but, you know, that defense could easily give up a 40 burger, you know, the next week. So, you know, it's about, I think, almost about like which team is at home. And, you know, which team could just fire off more rockets. And if the Rams were at home, I'd be betting on the Rams. And right now I think the Rams probably are going to end up with probably one or two more wins than the Saints.
Interesting. That's playing out the rest of the schedule. We'll have plenty of time to look forward to the rest of the schedule a little bit later on this week. But it is Monday, so we got to break some stuff down. And one of the things that I found interesting that you just said, Scott, is that Duke Johnson, well, we were talking in the last hour, you mentioned that Duke Johnson may be a big waiver ad because, you know, the offense has almost rediscovered this pass catching back in their offense. I think there's another team that has just done the same. I'm talking about the Detroit Lions. Maybe they have rediscovered Theo Riddick as a pass-catching running back. He has 7 catches yesterday for only 36 yards, but remember the way Theo Riddick has been used a lot. So maybe similar to Duke Johnson. He's coming back from an injury, but it was not enough as the Detroit Lions lose to the Minnesota Vikings 24-9. Let's start on this Detroit side, though, Scotty. Matty Stafford, 25 for 36, 199 yards. Kerryon Johnson does not do as much. You know, a lot of people were really excited about Kerryon Johnson. He gets only 44 total yards and 3 catches, so the 7.5 points in PPO scoring, you expecting a little bit more of that. But talk to me about what you expect of this offense moving forward, especially the Theo Riddick role, especially what you see in this offense now after the trade of Golden Tate.
I want to get your perspective on it. I'm curious.
Okay. I think that, you know, Golden Tate, a lot of what Golden Tate did was in the short passing game. And I think that the way I framed the question would kind of give you a little bit of a idea. I think they believe Theo Riddick can do a lot of what Golden Tate did in the short passing game. I think they wanted to clear the way for our guy Galladay, similar to how Denver wanted to clear the way for Courtland Sutton. And even though Galladay only goes 3 for 46 yesterday, he has an end around carry for 8 yards as well. I think they did. That's what they want to do. Utilize Theo Riddick to take up some of that Golden Tate, clear the way for Kenny Galladay. And I do think they want to run the ball. They weren't able to because of game script necessarily, but I do think they want to run the ball and grow into a more balanced attack with Kerryon, my wayward son. That's my take on it.
That was my take on it too. I don't know so much about Riddick. What we saw from Riddick yesterday was probably his ceiling, and I don't think they've rediscovered him. It's just he came back from an injury and he started to play his role again. Galladay and Marvin Jones didn't do a lot yesterday. And to me, those are the guys over the long run that should be the beneficiary of Golden Tate not being there. You know, because you saw Galladay fall off and then he had another bad game yesterday. They have to get him back more involved in the offense. You need to see more from Marvin Jones, but it was a defensive game yesterday. And, I had heard over the weekend that Golden Tate was gotten rid of because he just didn't get along with the coaching staff or the quarterback. You know, I'd heard that over the weekend, and that's part of the reason why they got rid of a talented player like that. So it was more intangible than it was strategic.
And Scotty, correct me if I'm wrong, this would not be the first franchise where that was something of an issue for Golden Tate, getting along with the quarterback.
Yeah, we heard that story about him and Russell Wilson, but, you know, Russell Wilson's the kind of guy that, you know, it seems like Russell Wilson, like, there were stories about, like, how Percy Harvin didn't like him. And then you saw him and Percy Harvin, like, you know, hugging, you know, like a year after that. So, you know, Russell Wilson's the kind of guy. Well, I guess, you know, I don't want to get too much into the weeds about this. But, you know, I've heard that Golden Tate is a guy that basically the front offices don't like. You know, that he's kind of a knucklehead, et cetera. Yeah. I mean, when he first got to Seattle, he got arrested for walking into a Krispy Kreme when it was closed and taking some donuts and walking out.
Well, how about that, Golden Tate? You know, but hey, he is one of those tough wide receivers that you like to have, and it's going to be a very interesting fit for the Philadelphia Eagles offense, who were on bye. I will say this, though, Scotty, at the sports book I was in yesterday, even though the Eagles were on bye, there was no shortage of Eagles paraphernalia and gear down there in Atlantic City, I'll tell you that. Let's look, though, to the Victor Go the Spoils. The Minnesota Vikings are 5-3-1 right there, along with the Bears in the NFC North. And so I got to ask you two things. One, Dalvin Cook finally returns and looks like, you know, he did have a long touchdown run, didn't pop the hamstring over again. So I ask you, is that the end of Latavius Murray? And then the other thing I have to ask you is, you know, unfortunately, Adam Thielen does not continue his streak of 100-yard receptions. And I bring the case study of what you just mentioned about Tyler Boyd. You know, you talked about, hey, Tyler Boyd has been so great, but now without A.J. Green, what might happen there with the defensive attention and all that stuff? Adam Thielen has had, past tense, 8 straight games of 100 yards receiving. Then what was different this week? There was no Stephon Diggs, and so attention and all that stuff could go to Thielen. Do you think that had anything to do why Thielen only goes 4 for 22 in this effort?
Yeah, well, with Adam Thielen, he also had a minor calf injury yesterday at one point that he was trying to play through. So, look, Kirk Cousins didn't have his number two receiver, but he's been without him before. Well, he hasn't been before. The Vikings have been without him before.
Right.
And they adjusted. But this was just a divisional physical sort of game. And then when you look at the game flow, it was really about the defense dominating more than anything.
Yeah, Hunter, I think, got in the end zone on an interesting play for a defensive touchdown right there. Danielle Hunter gets a touchdown. That's what made it 24-6 and pretty much put the Lions to bed. Talk to me about, should we put Latavius Murray to bed because Dalvin Cook is back?
I don't think you fully can. I mean, obviously, right, you have Cook, you keep him around as a handcuff because we know that Cook can't stay healthy. And, you know, Latavius Murray still might have a role as a goal line back, et cetera. You know, maybe becomes a sort of Ito Smith sort of type. But I think you have to leave him on your bench because you just don't know with Dalvin Cook. If you can stash him, I think you have to do it. And, you know, we're getting close to a point where we're getting close to the fantasy playoffs, and I think you do this maybe more in week 11 and 12.
Right.
More than
after
anything.
The buys, right? After the buys.
You want to have the direct backups to all of your running back starters on an NFL team, and you can consider maybe for a quarterback too, you know, if you play in a really deeper league, especially if you play in a two quarterback league, you know, you want to start picking up those backups. Like, you know, if in a two quarterback league to whoever your starters are, if you have, Russell Wilson, if he gets hurt, you know, you want to have a Brett Hundley, you know, for example.
Give me a little Chad Henne to back up my Patty Mahomes and whatnot. But, Scott, and that's a good point. In general, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you're a playoff team, right, as soon as these buys kind of die down for you, you are casting aside your RB6, your wide receiver 5, your second tight end, right? And what you're doing instead is organizing yourself to have the best possible lineups for week 14, 15, 16. And like you said, some of the handcuffs to your studs. At that point, are you even looking ahead to say, like, oh, let's find out who the Buffalo Bills are playing on week 15 and grab that defense now to stream in that point? You're starting to organize yourself for the playoffs?
Yeah, I think you have to do it, you know, and now's the time to do it. You know, I always get a good laugh out of people who plan for the fantasy playoffs in August. You know, I'd say,
right,
oh, look at this guy. He has a good week 14,
well, just
15,
some confidence,
16
Scott.
Schedule.
Some confidence.
What's
that? Just
no, it's a waste of time. It's silly because you can't look ahead to what your team's going to look like in week 14. And, you know, who's going to consider Marquez Valdes-Scantling in August?
Right.
You know, nobody ever thought of that. Your team changes so much, and there's so many changes in the NFL from, say, August to October, that looking at a week 14 schedule in August, it's just ridiculous and a big waste of time.
All right, fair enough. Let's go to another game. You know, bond burner of a game down there in South Florida, Scott, as the Miami Dolphins take out the Jets 13-6. Brock Osweiler winning a game in which he throws for 139 yards. The Dolphins winning a game in which their leading rusher goes for 53 yards. Let me actually add these up real quick. The Miami Dolphins win this game, Scott, with a total net yards of 168. They ran 55 offensive plays, Scott. They gained 168 total yards, Scott, and they win this game 13-6. You want to know the reason why? The reason why is because Sam Darnold continues to make ridiculous throws to people in the other jersey. Another 4 interceptions for Sam Darnold.
Yeah. Defense rule the day for some fantasy players. I played the Dolphins defense.
Oh, the Miami defense?
Six leagues. I said both of these defenses were good streams, but Miami scored 26 to 28 points, depending on what scoring system. I had them in like about half or a little bit more than half of my leagues. And when you have guys, you know, like, who are just not putting up the kind of numbers that you hopefully expect, like if you had a Mike Evans or a Tariq Cohen or somebody like that, then you got 26 points from your defense. It saves your fantasy day. So you can't underrate the importance of the defensive unit in fantasy football when you're talking about 6 or even 4 teams on a bye. You know, this was you got to start streaming defenses against the Jets because I don't know if they're going to go to
Sam will turn it over.
Yeah. It's a legitimate thing to wonder right now if the Jets will go to Josh McCown at some point just to you know, clear Sam Darnold's head and have him watch what McCown does from the sidelines, because we know McCown can move the offense, et cetera. You know, they do have Quincy Enunwa back now, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I think Jermaine Kearse would just be a better fantasy wide receiver, or he'd just be a relevant fantasy wide receiver with Josh McCown at quarterback, because the two of them did show a connection, something of a connection last year. So until then, though, you got to keep streaming defenses against the Jets.
Yeah, let me ask you this. Remember how I was so surprised with that 37.5 being the over-under total for the Bears and the Bills game?
Yeah.
Scott, next week the Jets play the Bills.
The Bills are a viable stream.
I know, but my question is, like, what do you think is the game total going to be on that one?
20?
That's what I'm saying, right? Like, who is going to score? Like, how are you going to analyze that game when we got the Jets and the Bills, two putrid offenses going out it? That could be interesting.
Here's
right?
another point about
if you
this
do the
game
single
too.
Game showdown, do you, like, make the kickers your MVP in that game?
Yeah, I think so. But then again, you know, both these teams, you never know in the NFL, could blow up for like 25 points each.
This is
but
true.
But the big thing is, you know, it's, you know, sometimes you get lured in, and I'm guilty of it too. It's like a lot of the fantasy industry, including myself, was seeing a big game from Isaiah Crowell. But you got to learn with Isaiah Crowell. You know, Corey learned that lesson in a big way, more than any of us last year. But Isaiah Crowell is just mediocre. You know, he had a 200-yard game, played way over his head a few weeks ago, but, you know, so unreliable. It doesn't matter what the matchup is. You never know what you're going to get to Isaiah for Isaiah Crowell, and two times out of three, you're going to get a crap or a mediocre performance.
Guys, I have a total
Isaiah
for you.
Crowell, I thought it was set up as well. He only goes for 49 yards
on the
ground.
You only look at matchup. You can't predict execution. That's the one thing. Once the game starts, you know, you can look at the matchups and do everything you want, but it's very, very hard to predict execution.
All right, so let me ask you this. Scotty, one of the guys I was on, remember, you told me props last Monday when I was on this guy. Elijah McGuire, though, Scotty, 7 carries for 30 yards and a little something extra in the pass game, 3 catches for another 37 yards. So McGuire in this game where the Jets, you know, score 6 points, he has 67 scrimmage yards and 3 catches. Do you think we're going to see more out of McGuire out of the backfield?
We might with the way that Crowell is playing. And on the other side, you know, for me to start Devontae Parker, that's something I should have known better too. To either recommend Isaiah Crowell or start Devontae Parker, all these stories in the South Florida paper, oh, I'm feeling better, they're moving me around the formation. Yeah. You know, I'm finally going to show what I'm worthy of in one catch for 8 yards.
Yeah, and then let me ask you finally on this game, as we close off the hour, Scott, one of the tight ends you've been talking about as a deep streamer is Chris Herndon. He delivers again, 4 for 62. Can we expect this to be the new trend here?
As long as Sam Darnold's playing quarterback, he's got an affinity for him. He scored in 3 consecutive games, no touchdown yesterday, but still got you 10 PPR points. You know, this guy is certainly a useful fantasy tight end too.
All right, absolutely. When we come back on the other side of the break right here on FST, we talk about NFC South matchups in Carolina, AFC North matchups in Baltimore, and a great non-conference matchup with the Chargers and the Seahawks. When we come back, it's Dane and Scott looking back on Week 9, telling you what you need to know so you can get a W in your playoff push. Come on right back. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice, we play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build and optimize lineups for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Welcome back. No diggity, no doubt. It's FST on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Dane Martinez and the King, Scott Angle, breaking it down. All the games from Week 9 and the fantasy nuggets you need as you start to organize yourself moving forward. Hey, Scotty, I want to ask you something. Based off of our last conversations, you know, you talked about Duke Johnson. We talked about Theo Riddick coming back from injury. We just mentioned guys like Elijah McGuire, and we said that the waiver wire might be lighter this week because there weren't really any catastrophic injuries just yet, knock on wood, with one game left to play. If I told you that Theo Riddick, Duke Johnson, and Elijah McGuire would be three of the more heavily added running backs this week, A, would you buy it? And B, how would you prioritize them?
I would buy it. I would definitely put Duke Johnson first because what we've seen is, what we've seen from Duke Johnson is, well, I'll get to Riddick in a second. What we've seen from Duke Johnson in the past makes me believe that he has the biggest ceiling of the three in a PPR. In effect, he could become the number two wide receiver on that team. Number two would probably be Elijah McGuire with the way that Crowell is playing, and they can get him involved in the passing game, as you've expertly said before. They like him a lot internally. Number three would be Theo Riddick. Yesterday, what we saw yesterday was his ceiling. Theo Riddick really hasn't been consistently useful since 2015.
All right, so there you have it. If you're looking for some PPR boost with some buys, you got some options there. Duke Johnson, Elijah McGuire, and Theo Riddick. Hey, let me ask my man. I got my man Chris Bavona, the Manimal. He's down there in the fantasy pit of misery. Dilly dilly to him. Ask and you shall receive. It sounds like he does have early totals on that Jets-Bills game next week. Hey, Chris, come on and join us for a hot second.
Here we go. There we go. I need to turn on my mic. Yes, I think I do. Fantastic. Have. I think I have the total for the, total? The Jets. Yes.
What do we got? Can I guess? Can I guess?
You can try and guess.
I'm gonna guess 35 and a half.
A little lower.
33 and a half.
A little lower.
33.
Getting warm.
You're getting warmer. You're still lower.
32 and a half. 32 and a half.
You know what? You're getting warmer, but you're still cold.
All right, what is it? What is it? What is it?
0.0.
Thank you. If it was, in fact, 0.0, I think I would be forced to take the over on that one. We'll find out what that actually is. I think we do have some look-ahead lines over on the FanDuel Sportsbook. We'll check that out in a little bit. But some teams that do score points is the next game I want to talk about. The Carolina Panthers go to 6-2 on the season at home against the Tampa Bay Bucks. They get a 42-28 victory. Scott, we were talking about this. I was talking about it with George Kurtz on Friday. It all kind of turns into a blur. I was saying that, listen, with North Turner as the offensive coordinator, he has dramatically improved Cam Newton's completion percentage. This is a guy who usually throws between like 50 and 55% completion percentage, which is normally towards the bottom of the NFL. He was at 66% going into yesterday's action, and he increased that, going 19 of 25, 247 yards, two touchdowns. He also runs for another 33 yards. He's getting the ball into his playmakers' hands. Curtis Samuel with a touchdown. DJ Moore getting plays, and then Christian McCaffrey, 17 carries, 79 yards, two touchdowns, another 78 yards in the passing game with five catches as well. I've been saying, don't look now, but the Panthers, similar to the Chargers, are this kind of under-the-radar team. Here's the question I have for you, Scott. What's the difference between Christian McCaffrey and Alvin Kamara?
More consistent touchdown production. From Alvin Kamara, I think the numbers are better overall. In that regard, I think that's the big difference. McCaffrey was a guy that until recently people in non PPR leagues were very, very worried about, and I think that's been quelled over the last a miniature way. But I think. I think there's still concerns about that. Touchdowns are a big difference. Alvin Kamara to three touchdowns in a game, it's wonderful, but I don't think you're surprised. But when you get two touchdowns in a game from Christian McCaffrey, like, that's a very pleasant surprise.
Yeah, absolutely. And that really is the difference, right? Because I look at their stats right now. Okay, right now, Alvin Kamara is RB2 in PPR formats. He has 490 yards rushing. Christian McCaffrey has 502 yards rushing, both of them within two rushing attempts. Kamara with 111, McCaffrey with 109. Then, when I look in the passing game, Kamara 51 catches, McCaffrey 49. Their yards receiving are very similar as well. But Alvin Kamara has 12 touchdowns this season so far, 9 on the ground, 3 via the air. Christian McCaffrey only 5, 3 on the ground, 2 via the air. That is what is making the big difference. That's why Alvin Kamara is RB2 and McCaffrey is RB8. But you can't be upset if you drafted Christian McCaffrey, really. If you drafted Christian McCaffrey at the top of the second round, you can't be upset with that. Especially, I mean, I'm talking PPR, right?
Well, but it's PPR, you can't be upset. No, not whatsoever, because there's a nice, you know, 12 to 14 point floor there every week. And if that's the worst you're going to get, that'll be fine because everybody's not going to blow up every single week. But, you know, there are a lot of people who drifted Christian McCaffrey end of the first round and beginning of the second in a non-PPR, and they just should have known better.
Yeah, absolutely. As I look at the top 10 running backs right now in PPR scoring, Scott, at the beginning of the year, if you told me that that three of the top 10 running backs were going to be James Conner, TJ Yeldon, and Philip Lindsay in PPR scoring, you know, I would have needed to go with you to the track and bet the Breeders' Cup over the weekend, you know what I mean? But let me ask you this. My setup on the Panthers, do you agree? Do you agree that North Turner kind of understands what he has in terms of playmakers like Moore and Samuel and McCaffrey and trying to get the ball out quicker and how that could be the answer to the ills of Cam Newton's completion percentage? I mean, early in his career, if you remember, Scott, he basically had a basketball team to throw to, right? You know, Funchess at 6'4 or 5, Kelvin Benjamin at 6'4 or 5, Greg Olsen at 6'4. And people thought that was the way to help his accuracy, right? With big targets who had big catch radiuses. Now it seems like North Turner's going the other way. Let's get the ball out of his hands, let him go shorter passes, and get, you know, have his shake and bake playmakers make the moves. Do you see that as well, and do you think that that's what Cam has needed all along?
I think what Cam now has is a diverse supporting cast. And you remember during his MVP year, you know, his completion percentage wasn't terrible, so he's certainly capable of this. You know, I think it's a question. I think it's two things. I think it's mechanics and decision making. Because, you know, in the past, you know, we've seen, you know, him not be so accurate and not throw the best mid-range passes. But right now, if you look at this receiving crew, it's very diverse. He has a guy he can throw to out of the backfield, which certainly increases his percentage because, you know, it can just throw him a flat pass and then he can take it for a lot of yardage himself. Then he's got a big receiver in Funchess. He's got his old reliable in Greg Olsen. He's got a speed receiver with Curtis Samuel. And then he's got a guy who can do things after the catch like the rookie DJ Moore. So it's a very deep receiving crew.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, and hopefully, and Cam seems to be taking full advantage of it. You know the threat that Cam also poses in the run game. This is a team to me that when they're winning, when they're out in front, get out of the way because they can start rolling. It's when they face struggle and adversity that they, you know, that they can't really get through it. You know, and I think Cam is a figurehead for that. Talk to me about the other side of things here, Scott. The Bucks get 28 points. Fitzpatrick throws, you know, 4 touchdowns, but the 2 picks. The magic is not necessarily there. What do you take out of this Buccaneers? Because look, how do you know? Mike Evans goes only 1 for 16. Maybe he is hampered by that knee that we talked about. Adam Humphries 8 for 82 and 2 touchdowns. You know, we've been on Godwin all season long. He only gets 2 for 40. OJ Howard, we know about. Like, is it shifting in Tampa? It's Adam Humphries. It's OJ Howard. What about the names we know? Godwin's, Evans, Brate. What do you see here moving forward for this Bucs offense?
I think a lot more of the same from Ryan Fitzpatrick, although I maintain that he still has the danger of dropping out to 1 touchdown and 3 interceptions or 4 interceptions in any given week. You know, like Sam Gardens was saying yesterday on Lineup Lock, you know, there's a very high ceiling, but then there's a very low basement. You know, that's what you worry about.
That's the magic.
Like Ryan Fitzpatrick. It's the magic is not so good fantasy-wise, though, because you could be in a key game that you that you really have to win, and maybe you're in a playoff game. You get comfortable with this guy. He could drop a bad one on you at any time. It was quiet for DeSean Jackson, but you know, I think that was his first single performance game since early in the season. But yeah, you know, sometimes you run that risk with DeSean Jackson, who's a deep guy and not more of anything else. Chris Godwin's too touchdown dependent. I think Evans, as long as he's healthy, should bounce back. But O.J. Howard is the guy because, you know, I've been ranking him top six for weeks now because, you know, this is his breakthrough year. He's quickly making a splash here right in his second year, which is kind of fast for a tight end overall. But he's definitely like top five, top six right now, and I think that's going to continue. He's a must-start every single week.
Yeah, remember, this guy was drafted high coming out of Alabama. We talk about tight ends as rookies, it being hard to kind of adjust, and we expect second-year tight ends to sort of take a jump. O.J. Howard is certainly doing that. And correct me if I'm wrong, Scott, but Cameron Braid, I think, is a free agent in the offseason, and he'll probably get some money to be a starting caliber tight end somewhere else, similar to what we saw out of Trey Burton in this offseason. So it's sitting pretty for O.J. Howard in the long term, right?
It definitely is. I mean, it's huge for O.J. Howard. You know, the one thing here is Adam Humphries was a surprise because usually when we've seen Jameis Winston in there, he has an affinity from Humphries. You know, this could be like the best game of his career, and then you can see four quiet weeks. So don't overbid on Adam Humphries. I'm not sold on it.
Yeah, fair enough. I hear you. And listen, I've been saying it for weeks. Remember when they made the switch to Jameis? I was like, get Jameis in your lineup, you know? And I still maintain that because this Tampa Bay defense is so trash, that Tampa's going to be in shootouts. Yeah, they're going to continue to throw interceptions, but you may still get those touchdowns as well and kind of back and forth games. I would maintain that the Tampa Bay quarterback, like even last week when they made the switch, if you combine, like in some leagues, you can get like Tampa Bay quarterback. I still think Tampa Bay quarterback is going to be in shootouts, and I still think Tampa Bay quarterback is going to throw all the time, especially because, to your point, you don't like Peyton Barber, right? You don't like Ronald Jones. And didn't Ronald Jones get banged up a little bit in this game also?
Yep. Well, no, he got injured last week, and he's going to be out for a while.
Someone got banged up. There was a Tampa Bay running back that did get banged up. Was it Barber?
I didn't see anything about Barber. I saw Mike Evans took a hit to the back of the head and left the game for a while.
All right, so I digress, though, but the point being, like, you don't have faith much in that running game, right? So Tampa Bay quarterback, despite the interceptions, which will happen if you take them as kind of like par for the course, they are still going to be in shootouts. I maintain they're going to be throwing the ball 45, 50 times every single week. Right, Scotty?
Yeah, it's pretty much on point, yeah.
All right, fair enough. Here we go. I want to ask you, Scott, before we go to the next break, I want to talk about one more game, and it was the battle in the AFC North. The Pittsburgh Steelers, and this is another one of my, like, don't look now teams, like the Chargers, like the Panthers, but don't look now, but the Steelers are kind of in a little bit of a groove. They go to 5-2-1 on the season, beating the Ravens 23-16. However, I want to start real quick on the Baltimore side. You know, we were just talking about the waiver wire ads, Scott, and I was bringing out some pass-catching backs like Duke Johnson, who's back on the scene, Theo Riddick, who's back healthy, Elijah McGuire, who may grow in some opportunity. I got a hot take for you, Scott. I think the biggest quarterback ad on the waiver wire this week, despite the fact that the Ravens are on bye next week, should be Lamar Jackson. I think this might be the time, Scott. I know they're 4-5, and you can make the argument that they're still in contention, but after the bye, a lot of things happen. The Ravens are on bye week 10. Handicap it for me, Scott. What do you think percent chance that, not for week 10, but when we're sitting here in a week and a half, there's an opportunity that they do make the move to Lamar Jackson? Flacco started well, but has kind of come back to earth. 23 for 37, 209 yards, and you once again see that they just don't have the kind of excitement, the potential, anything dynamic going on in that offense. How crazy am I if I am reading the tea leaves and think the move to Lamar could be coming?
I don't think it's crazy. I think there's a 50-50 shot of it happening. we saw from Lamar Jackson, especially in the preseason, he can be very up or down and very erratic, but he challenges defenses more than Flacco does. And, you know, right now, you know, you're not seeing anything from the receivers. The running game is muddled. You know, I will always be of the opinion that they don't give Alex Collins enough work. I think that it would be very interesting to see Lamar Jackson in there playing read option with Alex Collins as the main ball carrier. I don't know if that's the way we're spitballing here.
Sure.
I think I'm more spitballing a little than you are, though, about the Alex Collins thing, because that's what I want to see and what I think they should do. But obviously, they don't feel the same as I do.
Yeah, but, you know, I listen, in a week, you know, we're talking about a lower, maybe a quieter waiver wire. And if you want to start getting ahead of the game, I really do believe, Scott, that Lamar Jackson, the time could be coming. The sands of the hourglass are certainly falling quicker for Joe Flacco moving forward. Real quick before we go to the break, let's talk about the Pittsburgh side of things. Big Ben got crushed, Scott. He came into this game. We knew what an injury to his non-throwing hand. It looked like it was a shoulder or something. He got crushed and landed awkwardly. You got to hear the sports book was aghast when that happened. But Josh Dobbs only goes in for one play. Are we concerned about Big Ben, or we think he's going to be just fine?
No, but I don't think there's any major concern over him. It looked like he just got the wind knocked out of him from all of the Pittsburgh reporters were saying.
All right, fair enough. James Conner, though. Come on, Scott. I mean, James Conner, 107 yards on the ground, and then 7 for 56 and a touchdown via the air. Like, this guy is right now, I think, RB3 going on in fantasy. Like, we have our weekly conversation here. I kind of don't care if Le'Veon comes back. James Conner is RB3 in fantasy. You got to keep it moving. The Steelers are on a groove right now. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Right, Scott?
I heard so much talk about people being worried about him facing the Ravens. He had 41 yards last time.
Don't matter.
You know, he's matchup proof. It doesn't matter. The guy leads the league in broken tackles. And like Sam Garns was saying yesterday on lineup block, it's because he had 41 yards a few weeks ago because they hadn't acclimated the offense and tuned it to him. Now the offense is tuned to him. You know, he's matchup proof.
Yeah, absolutely. He is RB3 in fantasy. Le'Veon, who was screamed at the sports book a whole lot yesterday. We got a couple more games to break down. We'll do that, and we'll preview Monday Night Football when we come back. It's FST.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
Let me hear you say. The party's on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Dane Martinez and the King, Scott Angle, breaking down the Week 9 games. And then we'll talk a little bit about Monday Night Football, which is going to cap it off as the Dallas Cowboys. How about them Cowboys, Corey Parson? Welcome the Tennessee Titans to town to Jerry World tonight. There's a couple of things I need. I actually am playing the fantasy executive, Corey Parson, in one of our leagues. He needs 30 points, I think, out of Zeke Elliott and the Dallas defense. So that's like, you know, that's possible. Not easy, but possible. Right, Scott?
Zeke Elliott, I think it's
Zeke and
possible.
The Dallas defense to get 30. Zeke and the Dallas defense.
Yeah, I think that defense could score double figures tonight.
Oh, all right. Well, that would be not necessarily helpful for me. By the way, I also just checked the FanDuel Sportsbook. They got early previews for Week 10. They are currently listing the Bills-Jets game at a total of 36.5. What do you say to that, Scott? We running to take
that
the under
seems
in that
high.
One? Yeah, it does seem high. I like that. I like that. I like that authentic reaction out of you.
zero.
Yeah, I'd take the over on zero, but maybe the under on 36.5. Scotty, we got a couple more games I want to get into. My pick, my team that I've been riding with since week one, their only losses have been to the Rams and the Chiefs, who we're considering two of the top three teams in the NFL. I'm talking about my Los Angeles Chargers, Scott. They get a W, 25-17. Don't look now, but Phillip Rivers has 19 touchdowns and only 3 picks this season. They do what they need to do. Melvin Gordon, 123 scrimmage yards. Melvin Gordon is RB7 despite his team having a bye, despite him missing a game. They continue to go right along. We talked about the Williams wide receivers, but Keenan Allen, Scott, comes back into kind of wide receiver one territory, at least for one game. 6 catches, 124 yards. Listen, the Chargers, they just have a lot of talent and a lot of weapons, Scott.
Yeah, and you know, they got big, great pass protection yesterday, whether it was standing regular in the pocket or using play-action passes. Phillip Rivers was just very crisp and very on point, although he didn't have a huge game. From an NFL perspective, he had a really good game. And you know, Melvin Gordon was just tremendous yesterday, breaking tackle. He was doing everything yesterday. He was breaking tackles. He was making defenders miss. He was, veering past the second level and, you know, using his speed. He was just a do everything kind of runner yesterday. It was a very, very impressive performance. They wore that Seattle defense out. A Seattle defense is playing very well. They really imposed their will on them. They played very good ball control, very, very, very good game plan, very, very balanced. The numbers don't look great from a fantasy perspective, but it was near flawless execution from an NFL perspective.
That's what I'm saying. This was kind of like, and I'm going to respect Seattle, okay, Scott, in Seattle, which is obviously no easy task. This looked like a good NFL team coming in there with a good plan, executing it well, doing what they needed to do to go in there and win kind of, I don't want to say decisively or convincingly, but like, you know, they had a working margin of 9 points for that kind of entire game. And you know, I've been so high on the Chargers, right, Scott? But check this out. I'm telling you right now, go grab the Chargers defense, okay? They sacked Russell Wilson 4 times. What was better to me, and you probably saw this because I know you saw the game, Scott, a lot of times when they were rushing Russell Wilson, they tried to, like, contain him and not let him get outside. You saw them rushing kind of on the edges to almost, like, contain him in the pocket. Again, smart planning and implementation execution. But I'm telling you right now, Scott, people need to go grab the Chargers defense if they haven't done so already. Next week, Oakland. Then also after that, Arizona. These are teams that I am not impressed with offensively, and these Chargers are going to get Joey Bosa back in the next week or two. You talk about sacks and turnovers, Scott. This Charger team is primed to score points, have a lead, and then put Bosa and Ingram and sicking them on the opposing quarterback. You know I like the Chargers. Do you agree that the defense may be something you need to add?
Yeah, yesterday it wasn't they weren't getting a pass rush. You know, I think they came in with only like 11 sacks or something like that. They were coverage sacks. The secondary played really, really well yesterday.
Yeah.
But it was before that. It was like even before they got to him in the containment, nobody was getting open. So they, to your point, you know, he tried to scramble and there was nowhere to go. Nobody was getting open. And then
Casey
there was
Hayward,
nowhere to
Desmond
go. There was nowhere to go. There was time to throw, but nobody was getting open. And, you know, from a fantasy perspective with the Chargers, it's really about Melvin Gordon, but who can you trust week to week in the passing game? It was very, very encouraging to see Keenan Allen have the type of game that he had yesterday, because he's been underperforming for many, many weeks. But to your point, you've said this before, he started slow last year and then he finished well. Keenan Allen really came on with a very, very encouraging performance yesterday.
Hey, Scott, by the time we talk tomorrow, you think Caleb Sturgis will have a job?
He's been in this league for a while. Sometimes with a kicker, they'll give him one more game to show if he can bounce back. And I've seen in the league this year, so I think there's like maybe a 40% chance he gets cut.
I saw a stat during that game. They said Caleb Sturgis has now missed an extra point and a field goal in 3 consecutive games, something that has not happened in the NFL since 1979. But the Chargers are off and rolling. I like what I saw there. Scott, I'll open up the floor. What did you take away from the Seahawks side of this?
from the Seahawks side of this, you know, the offense played one of its worst games of the year. Russell Wilson not only didn't have any time to get anybody open and he couldn't scramble, but, you know, he made some questionable throws for the second time this year on an out pattern. He had a pick six, so he's got to be careful with that. You know, he overthrew receivers as well. Just not a good game from Russell Wilson. Mike Davis really piled up the points as well. You know, he was involved in the passing game, but didn't show a lot of upside from a pure NFL perspective. Tyler Lockett and Doug Baldwin proving they're touchdown dependent, and Jerron Brown caught the first touchdown pass. And Doug Baldwin right now, you're getting to a point where in a 10-team league, he's a strong cut consideration, I think. And you really can't do anything with a 12-point in a 12-team league. You know, right now, there's no yardage after the catch. There's no downfield separation. What's that? Maybe I shouldn't say cut him. I'm kind of reacting like he had a 4-for-27, but right now,
he was 4-for-77.
I think that's his ceiling right now. You know, he's really not getting he's not Doug Baldwin right now. Just looking at him on film, you know, I stand corrected about for some reason I have a 4-for-27 in my head. I don't know why.
Yeah, he went 4-for-77, and I'll take the almost 12 points in PPR scoring. But I hear you. You know,
I think that's
still
a ceiling
a
right now, though. That, sure. That's the thing. It's a ceiling right now.
We got another game.
This was a team loss. The defense didn't play well either.
All right, we got another game to get to before we even preview Monday Night Football with a couple of minutes we have left. The Houston Texans get a W. They continue their winning streak. They beat Denver 19-17. The Houston Texans definitely made it a point to try to work Demaryius Thomas in early in the game, but he finishes with 3-for-61 and a huge false start penalty at some point in that game as well. But they do get the victory. Listen, I was on this game like close. You know, I did pick Denver in this game, and if McManus kicked some field goals, I would have hit this. But my bigger point was that the Texans' offensive line is not necessarily great, and they stepped up in class. They gave up 4 sacks, and it's not like this running game was going. Lamar Miller, 12-for-21. My man Corey Parsons in the studio right now knows Lamar Miller sucks, and Deonte Foreman may be back at practice this week. But I will say this, DeAndre Hopkins continues to impress. 10-for-105 and a touchdown. Demaryius Thomas, 3-for-61. I think this could be a decent tandem moving forward for Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, I certainly think so. You know, when Demaryius Thomas was impressive yesterday. Obviously, the adrenaline was going facing his former team.
Right.
You know, that's one thing. But he's certainly going to command some defensive respect. I think he's been more of a possession guy than he was in the past. But the thing with him yesterday that really, really impressed me was the fact that he was scrambling and, you know, he wasn't afraid to do it. So, look, you know, I've heard that that injury takes a year to fully recover, but it was a very encouraging performance in terms of him scrambling, et cetera.
Who do you think takes more advantage of the opportunity presented to them after the trading deadline? Cortland Sutton, who we see here go 3-for-57, or Kenny Golladay, who wound up, you know, going 3-for-46. Very similar stat lines for the two of them. A lot of people were excited about both of their opportunities after the trade deadline last week.
Golladay got off to a great start, and he's been silent, but, you know, I don't think we've seen the best of Cortland Sutton yet. So I'm going to lean towards Cortland Sutton on a team that the Lions are just like, they're such a team in transition right now. You know, they want to be physical. They wanted to get rid of Golden Tate. You know, they're trying to execute a vision there, but they're doing it like throughout the season. They're still a team in progress. Denver is bad, but I think Case Keenum is going to have to throw more frequently than Matthew Stafford.
Okay, fair enough, and that's interesting to say that when Matthew Stafford and Jim Bob Cooter, they have been throwing the ball all over the yard for years. They may be looking for more balance. Scotty, only a couple minutes left. We got Monday Night Football to look at real quick. The Dallas Cowboys right now are 4.5-point favorites against Tennessee in Jerry World. First thing I want to ask you, I know who you like in this game because you and I both have the Cowboys as a survivor pick in some places, so I know you like Dallas to win. I'm going to ask you to you know, see the future, Scott. Tomorrow, when we're here talking and it's 7:03 or 7:04, when we're talking about Amari Cooper's first stat line as a Dallas Cowboy, what is it going to be? I'm going to predict that he gets one big play, but then doesn't really get much else. I'm predicting 4-for-78 but that, you know, like 40 of it comes in one big highlight play.
Yeah, I think I can see that too. I think I think they're gonna try to, you know, make every effort they can to get him the ball tonight, because it certainly you know, opens things up, and you know, more offensive balance makes the defense respect them more.
All right, fair enough, Scotty. In one of my leagues, I'm up by 15. I have the Dallas defense. My opponent has Tennessee. You think I'm okay there? Then in another team, I am playing against the fantasy executive in our Carton the League, and Carton and Friends are up next. Scott, in that league, the fantasy executive is down by 31, but he has Zeke Elliott and the Cowboys defense. Where do you think that one goes down?
Yeah, you asked me that earlier, and I said yep. I think he has a good chance to win.
Yep, it is right now literally on the website a 50-50 shot. So we shall see. Scotty,
that's correct.
Over under is 40 and a half. How do you like points tonight or no? It sounds like you like the Dallas defense.
I do like the Dallas offense too, so I'm going to go over. I think the Tennessee defense is going to spend too much time on the field. I say Dallas wins this one 28-17.
How about them Cowboys? We'll be back to talk about it all day. Have a great fantasy day, Scott. Have a great fantasy day, players. We'll talk to you tomorrow, breaking down Monday Night Football and looking ahead to the waiver wires. Have a great day. Have a good one, Scotty.
You too.